So today is the glorious appearance day of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur. So we will try to glorify Him today. It's like a dwarf trying to catch the moon. We stand in awe of these great acharyas who preceded Srila Prabhupada, or Srila Prabhupada. Their qualities, their activities are really extraordinary. And we can just simply try to churn the ocean of their glories. So for the occasion, we picked a verse from the 11th canto, chapter 17. It's Krishna speaking to Uddhava, the descriptions of the Varnashram system. So this is text 27. Sorry. Translation. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. Mam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvase Sasanyavari Paskyatale Shatarane Om Gina Temaranda Syaganjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrachatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshvare Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Thank you. I just read one paragraph. This is quite a long purport. I just wanted to read one paragraph, and then we'll discuss the life and activities of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada writes, this is about the third paragraph, only out of His immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal Himself as the spiritual master. Therefore, in the dealings of an acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. He is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. It is worthwhile to take shelter of such a steady devotee who is called Ashraya Vigraha, or the manifestation or form of the Lord of whom one must take shelter. In the time of the appearance of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I would like to try to paint a picture of that era. And it was about 300, 350 years after the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And during his appearance, of Lord Chaitanya's, he made a great impact in India, especially in Bengal, but throughout India. He and his followers, the six Goswamis and their disciples, introduced, of course, the chanting of the holy name and the idea of pure, unalloyed, unmotivated, selfless service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the joy of that and how it is natural for the living entity. The jiva is meant to serve the Lord without ulterior motives. But in course of time, as it happens, the teachings were lost. We find in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says right at the beginning of the chapter how he instructed Vivaswan in the science of bhakti yoga, and Vivaswan instructed his son Manu, and Manu instructed his son Ikshvaku. But in course of time, the science as it is was lost, and therefore the parampara was broken. In the Sanskrit, it's called yoga nashta. Nashta means scattered. So there may have been pure devotees, but they were in the caves, they were in the forests, there wasn't the purity of bhakti yoga presented by the royal order. So also we find a similar phenomenon after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although there were exalted devotees that followed him and followed the six Goswamis, the movement was largely lost at that time. Not only lost, but it was in disrepute, meaning that some people who were not well-educated, ignorant people, they misconstrued Lord Chaitanya's teachings and the philosophy presented in Srimad Bhagavatam to be something licentious, to be something immoral, that they themselves didn't follow the regulative principles. They're called sahajiyas, took everything cheaply. And so the educated people in India looked with horror on this and looked with horror on the whole idea of Vaishnavism. That's how much it was misrepresented. Then there was another class of people, the caste Brahmins. In Indian society, the Brahmins are in the highest position, so they have many what we call perks in terms of their prestige, in terms of their material comforts, in terms of remuneration. So they wanted to protect their status, so they insisted that to be a Brahmin, you must be in a family of Brahmins. You cannot be a Brahmin by qualification, which is how Krishna instructs, again, in the fourth chapter of the Gita. He says, guna karma. It's according to qualities and activities that you have a place in society, not according to janma, not according to birth. But this was misconstrued by these people who were self-motivated. It's very understandable. They wanted to protect what they had. So that was another whole class of society that also was misrepresenting the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Then, in addition, this was the time of the British rule over India. In Bengal, the British had been there for about 100 years already, a little more than 100 years at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance. And so at that time, actually, the British ruled one quarter of the population of the earth. 25% of the people on the earth were under the Commonwealth, the British rule. And the geography also, 25% of the landmass were under British rule. So they had extensive colonization, and of course Bengal was one of them. Calcutta was a glorious city. It was said it was second only to London in terms of its opulence and elegance. So the British, in order to successfully rule, they had to also use the indigenous people, the Indian people, as part of their administration. So they started English-speaking schools. And these were much coveted because the Bengalis who went to these schools, they got a good education, and they were able to serve in the British government. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is an example, the father of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he was deputy magistrate, which is second only to the governor, second only to the governor of Bengal. A very prestigious position with a lot of remuneration, a lot of comforts attached to it. So this, the young people of Bengal very much wanted to go to these educational institutions that the British established because their future looked very stable and lucrative. But along with this British education, which was, you know, the English, the science, the math, etc., they also instilled in these young people the idea that their own culture, their own tradition was subordinate, was perhaps backward to that of the Western tradition. that we, they looked up the Christianity, they looked up at the idea of progress, was in the technological advancement. And so many of these young people started to look condescendingly on their own culture, on their own traditions. And they saw them as mysticism, perhaps, or mythology. So this was an added influence of the British and an added way that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were lost in time. And then in addition to those challenges, you had professional reciters of the Bhagavatam who would skip over the first 9 cantos and go directly to Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis. And people would, coming from that culture, they would throng to that. And again, the teachings were misrepresented. So on so many fronts, there were challenges. And Bhaktivinod Thakur, the father of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, took on these challenges through his writings, through his publications, through his preaching, trying to inform his countrymen of the glories of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of the glories of his teachings. However, he was a family man. He had a large family. He was getting older. And so he needed help. And at some point, he requested to be posted in Jagannath Puri. This was about 1869. And in Jagannath Puri, it is said that he had a dream in which Lord Jagannath came to him and said, I didn't post you here in Jagannath Puri simply to be a district magistrate, but I want you to push on the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I'm getting old now. I have so many responsibilities. I need help. And so Jagannath purportedly told him to pray to Bimala Devi for help. Bimala Devi is the internal energy of Lord Jagannath. She is worshipped in a temple within the Jagannath complex, the Jagannath Puri complex. She's worshipped. She has her own little temple. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur did that. And not long after that, he had a son. This was in 1874. And he saw this son as the answer to his prayer. He named the son Bimala Prashad, the mercy of Bimala. That was the birth name of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And right from his birth, he exhibited extraordinary qualities. It's famously said that the umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin thread, indicating his exalted qualities as a Brahmana that would be exhibited. And when he was about 5 months old, the Jagannath Rathyatra Festival happened, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house was right on Grand Road, which is where the Rath cart passes. And it stopped. The Jagannath Rathyatra cart stopped in front of his home. Sometimes we find even in Chaitanya Leela that the carts stop unexpectedly. And it takes, sometimes they call elephants to move them. At one point in Chaitanya Leela, they stopped, and even the elephants couldn't move them. So Lord Chaitanya went behind the cart and put his head on it, and the cart moved forward with a rattling sound. Easily moved forward, even after the elephants couldn't move it. So the cart stopped in front of the home of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and his wife, Bhagavati Devi, took the occasion to take the child, Bimala Prashad, he was 5 months old, and she brought him up and put him at the feet of Lord Jagannath, and he spontaneously reached out to touch the feet of the Lord. And then the Lord dropped a garland which encircled the baby at that time. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur took that very seriously, that that was an indication of the exalted nature of his son. And indeed, his son was extraordinary. He had a powerful intellect. When he was 9 years old, he had memorized all 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita and could recite them and explain them as well. And also, one phenomenal pastime, perhaps you've heard it, Srila Prabhupada recounts, when he was under 5 years old, he was 3 or 4 years old, he found a mango in his home that he ate. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur mildly rebuked him. He said, you know, this mango has not yet been offered to the Lord. You should wait until it's offered before you eat it. and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 4 or 5 years old, he took that rebuke so strongly that he never again in his life ate mangoes. Truly extraordinary. When he was in his 60s, one of his disciples would offer him a mango. He would say, "I'm an offender. I cannot eat the mango." So for those who have been to India, there are many austerities, but they're all balanced by mangoes. Mangoes are extraordinary. But he refrained from taking mangoes. His determination is just phenomenal, like Dhruva Maharaj, that he never... And then as a young man, of course, he went to these English-speaking schools, being the son of the magistrate, and he excelled in his studies. In addition to the regular studies, he also studied astronomy, and he excelled in that as well. And that's where he got the name Siddhanta Saraswati, because he was so extraordinary in this Jyotisha study of astronomy. And when he was 17, he started a little club with his friends. It was called the August Assembly, that they would come and discuss philosophy and other things that they were interested in. And they took a vow in this club, the August Assembly, that they would remain celibate throughout their lives, Naishtika Brahmacharis. And as far as anybody knows, the only person to fulfill that vow of all the club members was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, another indication of his incredible determination and commitment. So as time went on, he actually was studying in Sanskrit college, and he had a disagreement with the principal of that college over some astronomical calculations, and so he quit the college, dropped out. But his father was friends with the king of Tripura, and through that connection, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur became engaged as a historian in the king's court, and he had access to the king's library. So he could fully study not only the Indian tradition, but also the Western philosophy through this library. It's said that he had what's called an eidetic memory, eidetic, which means that he could read something once and remember it. When he was in his 60s, he could remember things he read as a child. So it was a great... boon for him to have access to this library of the king of Tripura. After the king passed away, his son, who became king, asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to tutor the prince, to tutor his son. So he did that, and he received a pension also for doing that. So he was in a very enviable position in society, being so well educated, so well placed in society. But he himself began to question his own choices in life. He became a seeker. And he felt that his choices perhaps weren't the best at that point. And so he consulted with his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he wanted a spiritual master. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicated that he should approach Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Gaurakishore Das Babaji was famous as a Vaishnava, of the highest order. However, he was not well educated. He was known as illiterate. So here we have Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is at the pinnacle of literacy, and he's approaching someone who is so-called illiterate. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji initially refused to accept him as a disciple. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur insisted, and it became a rasa between them. And finally, in 1901, he was initiated by Gaurakishore Das Babaji. I have here a statement Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made after that initiation. I'd like to read that to you. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recalled, "It was by providential dispensation," in other words, by the will of the Lord, "that I was able to fully understand the language and practical side of devotion after I had met the practicing master." So he's saying that the language and the practical side of devotion escaped him until he came under the shelter of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. No education could have prepared me for the good fortune of understanding my master's attitude. Before I met him, my impression was that the writings of the devotional school could not be fully realized in a practical life in this world. My study of my master, and then the study of the books, along with the explanations of Thakur Bhaktivinoda, gave me ample facility to advance toward true spiritual life. Before I met my master, I had not written anything about real religion. Up to that time, my idea of religion was confined to books and to a strict ethical life. But that sort of life was found imperfect unless I came in touch with the practical side of things. So he's saying it was very theoretical, the whole idea of devotional service. Even though he was associating so closely with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, even before the initiation of his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, he had started a magazine called Sajjana Toshini, which means that which gives pleasure to the devotees. And as a young, he was just a young teenager, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was helping with proofreading. He became very familiar with the whole process of publication and distribution of literature through this. But still, he says here that the practical side of devotional life became revealed to him by the grace of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, who himself was a completely selfless, exalted Vaishnava without any material motivation at all. So this started another phase of his life for Bhaktisiddhanta. The initial phase as a student was now complete, and now he became an ascetic in that he started going to holy places. He went to Puri, and then he traveled in South India, and he studied the teachings of the other acharyas, Ramanuja Acharya and Madhvacharya, and became very familiar with their approach to bhakti yoga. And then he finally, after some time, he returned to Mayapur, and he decided he was going to chant 1 billion names of the Lord, 1 billion, which is like the vow of Haridas Thakur. It took him 10 years to do that. He would simply sit and chant and chant and chant by the Ganges. Even it's described by Radhanath Swami that the hut where he stayed, the roof was not in good shape. So when it rained, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would hold an umbrella to protect himself from the rain during his chanting. So it was very austere for him, and he became committed, of course, to the glorification of the holy name through that austerity. Then a bit later, it was the Smarta Brahmins became very active. I mentioned how the Smarta Brahmins were protecting their status in society. And so there was a debate arranged between the Smartas and the Vaishnavas, and they invited Bhaktivinoda Thakur to come to present the understanding of Vaishnava philosophy. But he was unwell at that time, indisposed. And although Bhaktisiddhanta was quite young, he said that he would go in his place to represent Vaishnava ideology, Vaishnava philosophy. And so he spoke at this assembly. And at first he glorified brahmanas. Krishna also glorifies brahmanas. In this chapter that we're reading, chapter 17 of Canto 11, the description of the Varnashram system, Krishna speaks, this is text 16, of the qualities of a brahmana. It's very similar to what we find in Bhagavad Gita. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the brahmanas. So he in Bhaktisiddhanta, in this assembly, he glorifies the brahmanas, and the brahmanas are feeling very happy. And then he glorifies the Vaishnavas, and he says the Vaishnavas are superior to the brahmanas in every way because they have devoted themselves to the cause of the Supreme. They have left the pressures of this material world and the expectations of this material world, and completely taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it was a very sound defeat, because he established it through statements of the Shastras, through quotations from the great Vaishnavacharyas. However, from that point on, the Brahmins were his enemies. For the rest of his life, they were very bitter, and on several occasions they even tried to take his life. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda, Jai Shri Shri Sitaram, Lakshman Hanuman, Jai Shri La Prabhupada, Jai Gaur Nitai. Yeah, it became a bitter rivalry because they had so much at stake. They had so much at stake to protect their status in society. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we know, he's called the Lion Guru. That through his oratory, through his writing, he established that he wanted pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and nothing less. And he was fearless in his debates, in his presentation of Krishna consciousness, in his establishing the purity of devotees' behavior. He would not tolerate hypocrisy. That became absolutely abhorrent. And so in this way, he was able to reestablish the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to its proper glory. In 1914 was the passing of his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, probably the person who influenced his life more than anyone else. So that was a great loss to him. And then the next year, 1915, was the passing of his own spiritual master, Gaurakishore Das Babaji. So the two people that gave him the most inspiration and shelter had now left him. And he was left himself with this idea of reestablishing the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And at that time, many of the people who were following him were householders, so they had other responsibilities. They couldn't devote full-time to the mission. So through some suggestions, he decided to start this Gaudiya Math movement. In 1918, because there were no other Vaishnav sannyasis at that time, very controversially, he, on the occasion of Gaur Purnima in 1918, he went before a picture of his Guru Maharaj and accepted sannyas from him. So this, of course, you know, people were upset about this, but at that time he became a sannyasi. And then he started the first mission in Calcutta at 1 Ultadunga Road, the first Gaudiya Math mission. And one of the unique features about this mission was it accepted everyone who had the qualifications, who had the qualities of a Brahmin to be a Brahmin. In other words, he superseded, he transcended this caste system, which was so rigid at the time in India. So, you know, this created an uproar. But if people came who had these qualities, which I read, peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, and so forth, they would be accepted as Brahmins and initiated as Brahmins. Intolerable for the caste Brahmins. And they would follow a very strict, austere program that we're very familiar with, because it's also what Prabhupada inaugurated and established in his mission, the ISKCON Society, of chanting, of worship of the deity, of distribution of literature, of personal cleanliness, personal responsibility for one's consciousness. All these things were established in the Gaudiya Math. And that was the first of 64 Gaudiya Maths that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established throughout India, and then three overseas, one in London, one in Burma, and one in Germany. So it was really Herculean what he did. And he would himself not spend a minute but propagating the mission of Lord Chaitanya and countering these various other forces, whether they be the Sahajiyas, who took everything cheaply and were immoral and sentimental in their behavior, or the caste Brahmins. That was an ongoing You know, once they went on parikrama, he and his had a large following. They went on parikrama around Vrindavan, and the caste Brahmins were throwing things at them to discredit them and demoralize them. So still, he countered all these things. Of course, he countered the professionals who would recite the Rasalila pastimes from Bhagavatam. And he also countered this Bhadraloka, the young Westerners, the young people in India who were being drawn to the Western tradition and seeing the West as something that's progressive and their own culture as something that's backward and to be condescending towards. So all these things he was countering. It's no wonder he was called the Lion Guru, because everywhere he looked, there was this stiff opposition and misunderstandings and misrepresentation. And also he was very active in publication. He started a printing press, and then he started one when he opened a center in Madras. There was one there. He printed the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He printed the Chaitanya Bhagavat. He printed his own writings, the writings of previous acharyas, the writings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, constantly printing, and his disciples would be distributing them, very much in the line that Srila Prabhupada encourages us to do. So this is something that Bhaktivinoda wrote a personal letter to his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I'd like to read an excerpt from that. He says, "Saraswati, because pure devotional conclusions are not being preached, all kinds of superstitions and bad concepts are being called devotion by such pseudo-sampradayas as Sahajya and Atibari. Please always crush these anti-devotional concepts by preaching pure devotional conclusions and by setting an example through your personal conduct. Please try very hard to make sure that the service to Sri Mayapur will become a permanent thing and will become brighter and brighter every day. The real service to Sri Mayapur can be done by acquiring printing presses, distributing devotional books, and sankirtan preaching. Please do not neglect to serve Sri Mayapur or to preach for the sake of your own reclusive bhajan." He's telling him not to go back to his austerities of chanting by the Ganges by himself, but to give the gift that he has. "I had a special desire to preach the significance of such books as Srimad Bhagavatam, Satsandarbha, and Vedanta Darshan. You have to accept that responsibility. Sri Mayapur will prosper if you establish an educational institution there. Never make any effort to collect knowledge or money for your own enjoyment. Only to serve the Lord will you collect these things. Never engage in bad association, either for money or for some self-interest." So with this inspiration, he did so much in terms of printing and distributing devotional literature. So we're very much following in his footsteps at this time. So over the years, he had tremendous success in India especially. The devotees, or his disciples who went overseas, had very limited success. And then towards the end, he was feeling indisposed. He told his disciples that if it's explained properly, the philosophy and practice of Vaishnavism would speak for itself and gradually attract intelligent and sensible people. And this became more and more important to him to succeed overseas, to succeed in the West. In 1920, his mother, Bhagavati, passed away. And before she passed away, she gave him the same inspiration. Give this message of Lord Chaitanya to the Western world. So he was very motivated to do that. And it's said that his last gathering, in which there were thousands of followers, this is the final gathering before he passed away, he restated the urgency of presenting Chaitanya's teachings in the Western countries, despite all challenges. And he told them, "I have a prediction. However long in the future it may be, one of my disciples will cross the ocean and bring back the entire world. Also, we know that just a few weeks before he passed away, he wrote to our spiritual master, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and this is the letter that he wrote to him 2 weeks before he passed away. "I am fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people who are not conversant with the language of other members. This will do much good to yourself as well as to your audience. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher if you serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression to the people in general and philosophers of the modern age and religiosity." So that letter was dated December 3rd, 1936. And at the end of that month, or the 1st of January, he passed away, leaving his followers in a very difficult situation. Unfortunately, again, the Gaudiya Math dissolved. After all his work, the Gaudiya Math dissolved and became very much separate moths, each with its own acharya. So we have a few minutes left. I could read some of the final instructions Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave his devotees, and then perhaps if there's some conversation, some discussion, and then we'll have a pushpanjali for him. So this is December 23rd, 1936. This is now just a week before he passed away. And he said to the assembled devotees, "Perhaps many people have considered me their enemy because I was compelled to tell the unadulterated truth. I asked them to serve the Lord with all sincerity. I have given much anxiety to many people only because I wanted to inspire them to serve Krishna sincerely without material desire and duplicity. One day they will understand this." And he says to the assembled followers, "May the ultimate desire to become a speck of dust at the lotus feet of the followers of Sri Rupa remain ever awake in our hearts. Everyone, make the effort to perfect your worship of Sri Hari. Make this the only purpose of your lives. Maintain your worldly obligations in whatever way you can, but make the eternal principle, devotion to Krishna, the true purpose of your voyage through life. Let hundreds of dangers, insults, or persecutions come, but in spite of them, do not give up your worship of Krishna. When you see that most people are indifferent to Sri Krishna and show no interest in selfless service to Krishna and in talks about him, do not be discouraged. First of all, never give up your bhajan, your life and soul. Whatever arrangements we make in this world are temporary. There is no need to waste time thinking about gain or loss here. The only thing anyone should strive for is the one supreme goal of life. That is the treasure of love for Krishna's lotus feet. So, join together, all of you, and strive for this goal. Work together harmoniously with a single thing in mind and a single understanding. Working together with the same purpose, we will become qualified for the service of Radharani, the original reservoir of love for Krishna. Preach the message of Sri Rupa and Raghunath fearlessly and with great enthusiasm. Through this preaching, you will attain all perfection." Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So perhaps there are some points for discussion. Coco?
Hare Krishna. I wonder this strength that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj had to confront his enemies, how can we emulate that or, you know, learn from in today's atmosphere, like with our contemporary challenges? Would you say it's important to meet, to understand them? Because he was someone who really understood his enemies, if you would. I mean, he could praise them to such an extent that they thought he was on their side, and then he dealt his blow. And it really just defeated everyone. So how can we, in a practical way today, to do that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we understand a little bit of the stature of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that, you know, the incredible intellect he had, the incredible powers of recollection, the incredible devotion, commitment, determination. So this can't be imitated. We want to be inspired by it. But we need to understand our own situation in devotional service and be realistic and practical. You know, very much in this age, if you argue with people, even if you defeat them, they won't accept defeat in this age. So in former ages, like at the time of Lord Chaitanya, he had this long conversation with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had the sincerity and the intelligence that, yes, you are right, I am wrong. Similarly with others, you know. But in this age, people tend to have a position, very often is not based on logic or reason, it's based on emotion, and therefore they don't change their position, even though you may defeat them with logic and emotion and reason. Because of the emotional attachment, they remain very fixed, and they just become insulted and go away. So we have our secret weapon of prasadam. And very often, if you simply make friends with someone, it has much more effect than trying to defeat them in a debate. You know, you have to gauge where we are, where they are, what can we do practically to try to bring them closer to Krishna. In some instances, if they're envious, it's best just not to allow them space to make offense, you know, just to leave and pray for them. So it's a delicate thing. I think it takes a lot of thought and prayer, intuition. But I wouldn't recommend that we take the stance of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and become like lions, because people may run away from us rather than coming towards us.
Thank you so much.
Shall we have our... Prabhu, Roman?
Hare Krishna, thanks so much for the nice class, especially for all the nice references and letters. I was just wondering, like, when we look into the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we can see, as you mentioned, there's a lot of discipline and commitment which he was displaying. So I was wondering how we can take some of that as an inspiration, if you have any advice on how we can cultivate that a bit as well, ourselves a bit more, that discipline and commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, this is something that we look up to, but we don't try to imitate, because if we try to do too much too soon as far as self-discipline, then we can become frustrated and may not have the desired effect. We can see this as the goal and understand where we are and try to approach that in a way that's sustainable. We've seen in our history that sometimes devotees in their enthusiasm will take on more austerity than they're actually capable of, and then after some time, they can't maintain it. So they disappoint themselves, they disappoint others. It's in the final analysis, it's not really beneficial. That, we don't want that to be an excuse for being loose. Also, you know, it's a question of balance. How much can I do so that it benefits me and I can maintain it over years, over decades, for my lifetime? As we see in the example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, something that he could sustain perpetually. So it's a very individual thing. I think it takes some introspection and perhaps some help from our mentors, our peers, to determine that. But I would emphasize also the sustainability on one hand, and the other hand, not being lazy and the excuse of being sustainable. I hope that made some sense. I don't know if that...
My second question is, so could you explain a little bit about what happened after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj passed away? And because it was, if I'm not wrong, it was quite a dire situation for Gaudiya Math. And what is it that we can learn from that for our own ISKCON in this, you know, in our future? Like, what can we draw from that?
Yeah, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur instructed his disciples to make a governing body commission where a group of them would be the leaders of the Gaudiya Math. But instead, from my understanding, they appointed one person to be the acharya. They didn't follow that instruction. And that person couldn't remain strong in spiritual life. So when he fell down, then each of them, he had about 18 or 20 sannyasis, they went off and they established their own maths. It was splintered at that time. So Prabhupada, you know, was very aware of that tragedy with the Gaudiya Math. So he also insisted on this governing body commission, the GBC, which he established way back in 1970, I think, about 7 years before he departed, our Prabhupada. And he had them meet every year, as they still do in Mayapur, and discuss the situation of the society and make plans to correct whatever is going wrong and to push forward the movement. So in that way, they tried to avoid the mistake that had so splintered the Gaudiya Math. Does that answer your question?
I feel like if I ask further, I'm stepping into danger zone. But, well, I might just try, because say, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta or our line of acharyas, they came at a very precarious time when the movement really of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu really needed it. And now it's perpetuated, you know, for the past, how long, like 50, 60 years since Prabhupada came. And say, we don't know when the next acharya will be here. Or do we? I mean, when until that time comes, you know, maybe there are things that we could do to make sure that the integrity of the essence of the philosophy is kept. Because sometimes invention, you know, it could be modern adjustments or additions, perhaps, if we just follow the instruction as it was. If it's just on a practical level, it could you know, create like a tension, you know, that's not too progressive. Well, how do you adjust like progress with tradition?
Yeah, that's an ongoing discussion in the Hare Krishna movement, an ongoing debate. I think that it's really important that each and every one of us takes the teachings very seriously, takes them to heart, as well as the practices, meaning chanting and following the regulative principles, becoming absorbed in Prabhupada's books and lectures, conversations, so that we ourselves become more and more clear about what is Krishna consciousness and how we can become Krishna conscious and how we can give that consciousness to others. And then as these discussions go on, we don't have to be perhaps confused by them or distracted by them, but we remain clear in our own path and do everything that's within our power, within our capability to become Krishna conscious and to give it to others, and that will be pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and pleasing to our spiritual master. And if we can please them, then that is life's perfection. Shall we have the Pushpanjali ceremony? Yes, thank you so much for your attention, a very attentive audience. All glories to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.